Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Tuned in to the voice of the American Redoubt. This is episode 1814, the 14th episode of 2018. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, my name is your name too. Thank you for helping to spread the word about Radio Free Redoubt. Tell your friends, tell 5 friends this week about Radio Free Redoubt. And if you guys appreciate what we're doing, as we grow, the costs, of course, grow as well. We could always use your financial support and especially your prayers. I appreciate the letters of encouragement and news articles and just the discussions that take place as much as I'm able to keep up with during the week. But really appreciate you guys out there. If you're trying to save bandwidth, or you got some folks that maybe still live back in the 80s before internet, they can call in to listen. Our Stream Monster number is 857-757-1085. And that's how you call in. The other way to listen is to just click on the Listen, How to Listen tab at RadioFreeRedoubt.com. One of the ways, somebody was asking this week, I'm a new listener. I've listened to a few of your shows. I really like them. How can I listen to more? Well, you can go to our Podbean site. That's radiofreeredoubt.podbean.com, where all of our previous radio shows and podcasts are uploaded all the way back to June 5th of 2011. 7 years we're coming up on. I cannot believe this. I cannot even believe it's been 7 years. This coming June. Unbelievable. Okay, so anyway, I just appreciate you guys' support and really your prayers. I pray for courage, wisdom, discernment, and humility regularly because I need those things. And I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys, especially in the season that I've gone through in the last 8 months of my life. Unbelievable, unbearable without that type of a support network. And of course, the Lord having his hand over me. So I just want to thank all of you guys for being out there. All right, let's get into the news. And we are at AmCon 4. We are back to AmCon 4. We were at AmCon 3, heightened readiness level. I'm going to talk about all that during the show today and some observations that I made. But let's do that. News and commentary is brought to you by 299 Days book series and, of course, the author Glenn Tate. With all 10 books out, including audio books about preparedness, about the collapse and the rebuilding of America. Go to 299days.com to learn more. Okay, well, as I said, we are at AmCon 4. We were... Friday, we went to AmCon 3. I put out an alert on our ZDNT to our Amron core operators, urging them to place any non-critical equipment, especially electronics, into Faraday. AmCon 3 is a higher probability of a event that could disrupt our conventional communications, requiring us to use unconventional communications methods to be able to communicate and get information and share information. So AmCon 3 is your probable category, where AmCon 4 is possible. It's still possible. There still continues to be a significant buildup in the Middle East, especially in and around Syria. Russia is still moving military assets. We will continue to observe and watch and assess. So right now it is possible, but not very probable, that that situation over there could create a catastrophic or major disruption in conventional communications. But remember, these things happen very quickly, and it's very possible also that we could have major disruptions like that and be hurled into darkness with no warning. So when there is a probability that we're able to assess, we will try to get the warning out there. But don't rely on us. You are responsible for your own family, your own safety, your own community, to make sure that you are ready all the time and be watching also. I would say an EMP would be likely in the event that things go full craziness, but equally as likely a cyber attack to take down our telecommunications, our electronics, our electric grid. And they have the technology to do that now. We've caught foreign governments, and I'm sure we're guilty of it as well as a nation, of hacking critical infrastructure. And at will, now it's estimated they could flip the switch on our communications, on our electrical power grid, and so many other things, because they've been successfully hacked by other countries. And of course, you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility that the Russians could carry out some type of an attack and leave, let's say, North Korean fingerprints on it. So we'll see. There's nothing you can do about that, most of you. So don't worry about what's happening with nations rattling sabers with each other. You focus on your community, on your family, and that's where you can make an impact. So non-essential equipment, keep it in Faraday for right now. I'm going to talk about preparedness and give you guys some resources in segment 4. So stand by there. I mean, they had the nuclear doomsday plane up in the air, the E-4B, the Night Watch. That allows command and control to continue on in case of, nuclear war or some other type of major event. They had the president, the vice president underground. They had people scattering. The parking lot of the Pentagon was jam-packed full. And there were some pretty nervous people. Things could have, unfortunately, and I know cooler heads did prevail in the end, but I also believe that there was, we'll probably never know, the backdoor chatter that was taking place directly between the United States and Russia. Much more of that takes place than you think. Okay, just want to let you know, we're not going full retard with you guys. We're going to do this thing. And that's all we're going to do, and you're going to stand down, and we're all going to be in agreement here. We have to show some action, but this is the limit of what we're going to do. I mean, look, for a week, Russia was moving military assets off and away from these targets, right, so that no Russian assets would directly be hit deliberately. There was some, I wouldn't say choreographed, but there was definitely some there were some diplomatic discussions taking place. I have no doubt about that. Okay, let's go to the other continent, Africa. Your update from South Africa, of course, Sidelanders, once again, thanks you for your help with them, supporting them financially with their fuel goals. And they've also purchased some radios. But listener, an Amaron Core operator, sent this to me from the New American, one of my favorite outfits, the John Birch Society. I missed this one. I hadn't seen it yet. But they have this article here. World finally notices the plight of South Africa's minority farmers. After years of government-linked slaughter, torture, abuse, and hatred against embattled European descent farmers in South Africa, the radical government might have finally gone too far by openly vowing to steal their land without compensation. Now it seems the world is taking notice. Whether it's too little, too late, remains to be seen. Well, Australian authorities are speaking out, and they're actually calling for, last week, Australian Home Affairs, like their Homeland Security Minister, Peter Dutton, sparked headlines around the world by highlighting the systemic atrocities being faced by white South African farmers. He says, if you look at the footage and read the stories you hear from the accounts, it's a horrific circumstance they face. So now he's saying they need help. And how do they want to help it? Well, he's pushing for allowing for refugees to come to Australia The people we're talking about want work. They want to work hard and they want to contribute to a country like Australia. That's not what they really want. What they really want is to be able to stay home unmolested in their own countries. They don't want to run to Australia. Now, they will have to. They will if they have to. But I guess, I don't know, in Syria, you can use chemical weapons to kill people. But if you rape them and butcher them in front of their children, we'll let that go. I mean, where do you draw the line as far as we're going to intervene when atrocities take place? Is one way of killing somebody more atrocious than another? I would submit that killing somebody through asphyxiation because of chemical gas that you dump on them is more humane than the deaths that some of these people in South Africa have endured. Being gang raped and burned alive and dismembered and just horrifying what's happening. Oh, just come to Australia. Well, in the United States, the word of the dire situation facing the Christian Afrikaner people, descendants primarily of Dutch, German, and French, but forged into a unique nation in South Africa, is spreading quickly too. A petition asking President Donald Trump to offer asylum has garnered thousands of signatures and widespread national and international attention. So among other concerns, the petition notes that the government-backed land heists will dispossess victims of their history, their culture, their farms, their property, and their jobs. Exactly. They're not just looking for a new place to live. That's their home that they love. But this petition calls on the U.S. government to intercede by admitting them as refugees. Well, that's exactly what they want. It's just to get all of the people who aren't like them out. If you're not black, you don't belong here. Go away. They even said, we're going to kill you or run you out. It's their home. It was their home long before the blacks in that area came into that area. There were none, if you know the history of that area. So, anyway, I guess that's the solution. Take him in as refugees. If the UN wants to spread peace, put their money where their mouth is. How many billions of dollars do we spend on the UN? How about putting some troops in there and putting that government in check? Well, I would still like to see a Christian foreign legion that look kind of like the French Foreign Legion. They go in there when there's despotism and tyranny and people being butchered, mutilated, and slaughtered. They can go in there they definitely would be much more competent and effective than the United Nations. No kidding. But that's just, you know, pie in the sky, wishful thinking. We had a posting on Radio Free Redoubt last week. Let's talk about some of the stuff going on in the United States. You guys hear about Deerfield Village Board of Trustees in Illinois unanimously approved a ban on certain types of assault weapons and high capacity magazines. That happened on the 2nd of April. Well, the deadline that's coming up, it's what, June 4th? June, what is it? I have the date right here. It's June. It's like June 2nd, June 4th. The deadline for people to turn in their firearms or face massive fines or arrest. You know, April 19th is coming up this week. Patriots Day, the day when the British said, let's seize their batteries and let's take their gunpowder and their ball so that they can't use their rifles. Let's disarm the people coming for their arms. And there was a little showdown, and we hail them as heroes because they refused to be disarmed because of what happens when a citizenry allows itself to become disarmed, especially when tensions are rising, when the narrative is going the direction of calling for persecution and actually carrying out persecution of a people. The people who founded this country, Christian patriots, are now being targeted. And the hatred is increasing and now you want the citizens of this country to disarm? If there was ever a time to not only not disarm, but to increase the arms and the ammunition that you have, now's the time to do it. So I commend those who stand in defiance of this petty little ordinance, of this petty little band of tyrants telling you that you do not have the right to defend yourself in their jurisdiction. When they're the ones that are acting outside of their jurisdiction, they do not have the authority to make that type of a law or rule or enforce it. But they're trying to. Now, here's a story that was also posted on our Facebook page. A school district in Erie, Pennsylvania has supplied teachers and other school employees with miniature baseball bats to use as a last resort if confronted with an active shooter. William Hall, the superintendent of the Mill Creek Township School District, said, "We don't want to be sitting ducks." I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless. The 18-inch wood bats are also meant to be symbolic, he said. That's right. That's all they'll be is symbolic. This is a symbol of my resistance to you shooting me in the face. To remind people that the old policy of simply turning off the lights, shutting the door, and hiding is not enough. Now, he says, one option is fighting back. So they're giving 18-inch... They said they're akin to, they cost $3. They bought 600 of them. And he says that they're akin to a ballpark souvenir. He said, a bat, Mr. Hall says, I think a bat could disarm a pistol with a nice swing. This is, part of me wants to say, you know what? When it comes, you deserve it. But the kids don't deserve it. This insanity, they don't deserve. People, you should resign. The superintendent with this type of mentality should resign. We are living in a fallen world where evil abounds. You're not going to ban firearms and make school shootings stop or any active shooters stop. You're not going to increase more laws and dissuade people from killing innocent, unarmed people, just slaughtering them. With terrorism on the rise and more on the way, and Islam declaring war on the West, this isn't going away. This isn't a temporary trend. This isn't going to be like parachute pants or something that's just like something that, you know, used to be part of our culture, and now it's just we don't have that in our culture anymore, right? It's going to be, wow, let me off. Let me off. Stop it from spinning and just let me get off. That's what I feel like. Okay, Redoubt News. In the safe haven and refuge from this, the battle still rages, though. But in the American Redoubt, a safe haven of conservatism, thank the Lord. Redoubt News brings us this, though. Senate committee kills the Idaho gold bill. Bad decisions rule over reason. This was contributed by Don Dillon at Redoubt News on February 20th. This just came out, though. February 20th, five fallacious arguments were used by the Idaho Senate Committee on Local Government and Taxation to kill the Idaho Gold Bill, House Bill 449. And the arguments were gold and silver do not fluctuate based on inflation, and this bill will not provide a true offset to inflation. I don't know what planet he's living on. Gold, that's specifically what gold and silver standards do. Gold is simply another, their argument is gold is simply another commodity like salt. It's not currency. No, it's what you back your currency with, Senator Jim Rice. The taxation of gold and silver should be decided by the judicial branch was the other argument. Wow, the taxation of gold and silver should be decided by the judicial branch. Do you trust them with that? And is that even in the Constitution? I don't even think that's constitutional. For a judicial branch to determine the taxation on gold and silver. They're so confused. Anyway, this is going to come back. There were, this was, I think, 6-3 this was defeated. So there were three senators that actually saw the common sense and they saw the constitutionality of gold and silver being used to back our currency. But yeah, Senator Steve Vick, Senator Clifford Bayer, and Senator Brent Hill are the ones who had their heads screwed on straight with that bill. So thank you for bringing that to us. And then also finally in American Readout News, some very uplifting news. The Stevens County commissioners were presented the county resolution proclaiming to withdraw, proclaiming their desire to support and back the effort to withdraw along a set county lines to separate the state of Washington into two states, the state of Washington and the state of Liberty. They have about 10 days to put pen to paper and sign the proclamation. And they've got several other counties that are right on their heels, ready to do the same thing. And more presentations are being done by the Committee for Liberty State, making presentations to the leaders, the elected officials, and the citizens of various different counties. But it looks like Stevens County is going to lead the way by being the first to sign the resolution, which actually I think they're changing that to a proclamation. They're proclaiming their intent to back this effort. And the next step is a resolution where they resolve to officially call on their legislatures to vote to separate. So it's happening. The first domino is teetering, about ready to fall, and others behind it. The only reason why they didn't sign it, they wanted to add some stuff to it. They were so angry with the misrepresentation at the state level. I read it yesterday on the air, and you can go see it. You can see the resolution. It's posted at libertystate.org. And they were saying, well, this is so well written. We're just like ready to sign it now. But there's actually some other stuff that we're furious about. We want to add to this. So it was great. It was exciting. So really great historical thing to be a part of. Just really amazing. Okay, let's take a break. Segment two. When we come back, we're going to talk about something coming up this week. Patriots Day, the 243rd anniversary of the battles of Lexington and Concord. So that and more when we come back. Don't go away. This is the voice of the American Redoubt.
Greetings, Patriots. This is Chris Walsh, broker at Revolutionary Realty, located in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I sell land and backwoods cabins to America's Patriots every day. Creeks, springs, timber, and game, good survivable property without natural disasters. The state of Idaho has a balanced budget, and our people believe deeply in the Second Amendment. Call me today at 208-667-1776, or visit me online at www.revrealty.us. I'll be glad to serve you, and God bless America.
Back. This is segment two. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com is where you want to go. If you've got your site set and your strategic relocation plans, getting out of occupied territory while you still can, and you're looking at the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho, then check him out. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com, helping patriots just like you to get into the free zones. Hey, don't forget to also help support Liberty State right across the border from Idaho. LibertyState.org. If you support the state of Liberty, you can fly your flags. And this is so exciting. I'm getting word. People saying, we saw our first Liberty flag flying on somebody's house. We saw one flying in front of a business. The militia joint field training exercise this last weekend with multiple militias present. They were flying. One of the militias were Grant County. They were flying the Liberty State flag. Isn't that exciting? Now, this week, let's see, how do I want to do this? Patriots Day. Now, if you go to the National Park Service, NPS.gov, they've got a page on there for Patriots Day. Now, this year, we're celebrating the 243rd anniversary of the battles of Lexington and Concord. Captain David Brown's company of Concord Minutemen, each year in mid-April, thousands of people flock to historic Lexington and Concord and Minuteman National Historic Park to celebrate Patriots Day. Patriots Day is a special Massachusetts state holiday commemorating the opening battle of the American Revolutionary War. Now, did you key in on this, where this is located? Now, this is when the British said, we are coming to disarm them. We've got the secret military operation, which actually wasn't so secret because we had a great intelligence network set up among the Patriots that I'm going to talk about in segment three. No, maybe it's this segment. I'll get to that in my notes. But anyway, Massachusetts is where the Patriots stood their ground and said, we refuse to be disarmed. And they stood their ground at the Green at Lexington and the bridge at Concord. And the shot that was heard around the world, the first shot, was fired. They don't know who fired it conclusively, but one British soldier was shot, and what, four, six, eight? I think four were killed, four Patriots were killed, eight shot. And it all started on April 19th, 1775, in Massachusetts, where they proudly celebrate Patriots Day. They love being the home of this historic location where Patriots bled. But if you remember from April 6th, the hypocrites have lost their roots. They've lost their way. They've allowed their heritage to be stripped away from them. The lemmings that are so proud of this globalist, statist new vision for their state that carries so much history in the formation of this country. Assault weapons ban in Massachusetts. Assault weapons and large capacity magazines are not protected by the Second Amendment, a federal judge said in a ruling Friday, upholding Massachusetts' ban on the weapons. The U.S. District Judge William Young dismissed the lawsuit, said we won't even hear it, challenging the 20-year-old ban. For 20 years, Massachusetts have prevented their citizens the right, their heritage, to stand ready to defend their communities by being armed. But they said assault weapons are military firearms that fall beyond the reach of the constitutional right to bear arms. What? Regulation of the weapons is a matter of policy, not for the courts, he said. Other states are equally free to leave them unregulated and available to their law-abiding citizens, Young said. These policy matters are simply not of constitutional moment. Wow. That's what the judge ruled. Well, let me take you down a little bit further, because I want you to key in on this. They're saying the assault weapons are military firearms that fall beyond the reach of the constitutional right to bear arms. They're saying the constitutional right to bear arms doesn't guarantee you the right to have weapons of military use. Really? This is how far they're gone. This is how far they've fallen. So let me take you down a little bit further. Let's go back to 1939 in U.S. versus Miller. You know how sawed-off shotguns became illegal without a tax stamp? That was the National Firearms Act that had been enacted. there was a court case, the famous court case known as U.S. versus Miller in 1939. He was charged with not having a tax stamp for this sawed-off shotgun. One of the other arguments was that it's his right as a free people for the security of a free state to have a militia, and every member of the society must have a, you know, military-type firearm, or is allowed to have a military-style firearm, obviously, because they're part of the militia. Well, it's interesting. In 1939, in U.S. versus Miller, the conclusion of the court was he's guilty. First of all, they held up the clearly, in my mind, unconstitutional National Firearms Act. But what they held up is they said the court cannot take judicial notice that a shotgun having a barrel less than 18 inches long has today any reasonable relation to the preservation or efficiency of a well-regulated militia, and therefore cannot say that the Second Amendment guarantees to the citizen the right to keep and bear such a weapon. In the absence of any evidence tending to show that possession or use of a shotgun having a barrel of less than 18 inches in length at this time has some reasonable relationship to the preservation or efficiency of a well-regulated militia, we cannot say that the Second Amendment guarantees the right to keep and bear such an instrument. And then finally it says, certainly it is not within judicial notice that this weapon is any part of the ordinary military equipment or that its use could contribute to the common defense. Did you get that? The reason why these firearms under the NFA, while you're not protected by the Constitution from owning them, is because a sawed-off shotgun has no military purpose. Therefore, you're not guaranteed under the Second Amendment from having one. Why? Because the court was basically saying, you have the right, the constitutional right under the Second Amendment to have a military firearm. And a sawed-off shotgun is not used by our current military. And so we don't see this as a military firearm, so you do not have the right to have this shotgun. Wow. Have we turned 180 degrees? Because now, last week, or 2 weeks ago, the court rules, you can't have an AR-15. Because you do not have the right by the Constitution to have a military firearm. When in 1939 the court ruled, you do not have the right to have a firearm that's not military in use, because the purpose of having a firearm is for the common defense of our country. It can contribute to the common defense and part of the ordinary military equipment. So what would be part of the ordinary military equipment? It would be a M240, an M249, an M4, M16. That's an ordinary piece of military equipment that, if you're going to go by the Supreme Court's ruling in 1939, that is something you should have the constitutional right to have. And also, they say, we cannot say that the Second Amendment guarantees the right to keep and bear such an instrument. But they're wrong in 1939 as well. If you go back to Tench Cox, just one of the many founders of this great country, who was actually part of the Constitutional Convention. I think it was a delegate from Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania! And this is what he says. As civil rulers not having the duty to the people before them may attempt to tyrannize, and as the military forces which must be occasionally raised to defend our country might pervert their power to the injury of their fellow citizens, the people are confirmed by the article in their right to keep and bear their private arms. Tench Cox, in his remarks on the first part of the amendments to the federal constitution under the pseudonym A Pennsylvanian, in the Philadelphia Federal Gazette. And that was in 1789. Another quote by Tench Cox. Who are the militia? Are they not ourselves? Is it feared then that we shall turn our arms, each man against his own bosom? Congress have no power to disarm the militia. Their swords and every other terrible implement of the soldier are the birthright of an American. The unlimited power of the sword is not in the hands of either the federal or state governments, but where I trust in God, it will ever remain in the hands of the people. He said that a year earlier in 1788. Also, that was published in the Pennsylvania Gazette. So, I think they're a little off. Do you not think so? I definitely do. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about April 19th and April 18th, another key, important date that's coming up this week. Don't forget it, Patriots Day, April 19th. That's the day that started it all. So when the Revolutionary War started, why? Because their fellow citizens in that time chose not to be disarmed by a tyrant. And they stood with their arms. And that's where it all began. And man, are we coming full circle? We'll see what the Patriots in Illinois do. All right, we'll be back. Don't go away.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. The 51st state, Liberty State, there are a lot of myths going around, and one of them is that it's unconstitutional to split a state. Well, that's simply ridiculous. Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution says that no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. So all it takes is a vote of the House and Senate at both the national and state level to make it happen, and it's happened before. 1792 Kentucky, 1820 Massachusetts, 1863 West Virginia, and this is not to mention on the world stage, Catalan, Scotland, Ireland, and Brexit. You see, reestablishing boundaries to better represent the values, traditions, cultures, and customs of a people is actually a very normal phenomenon and the proper way to protect and preserve those beliefs for generations to come. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republican.
When a person desires respectability of people more than they stand in awe and fear of God, they sell out.
Going into segment 3 at the Voice of the Resistance here, Radio Free Redoubt. Segment 3 is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. They are a consulting service that is there to help you design your property. If you are looking for property and you need some help, or if you already own your own property and you want to set it up for sustainability, Strategic Landscape Design is going to help you out, including with defensibility. Really good stuff. Strategic Landscape Design, helping you to achieve a life of liberty. And don't forget to mark your calendars, the Red Pill Expo. That's June 21st through the 23rd. And I know it's a little spendy. If you can't afford it, you can still live stream that. And that's considerably less expensive. And that's something you can pitch in with your friends and make a weekend of it. Some great speakers lined up. Really cool. Okay, let's talk about the voices of the revolution. The five writers. You know there were five writers, right? Because normally people think of, Paul Revere. Paul Revere, he wrote and warned everybody that the British were coming, right? Actually, he said the regulars are coming. But basically, he was telling everybody that the British were coming. But there's actually five writers. And this happened on April 18th. This is a very historic day. Thanks to the epic poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Paul Revere is often credited as the sole writer who alerted the colonies that the British were coming. Yet, despite this tale, there were many writers who went out the night of April 18th and in the years following, warning the colonists of the approach and movement of the British forces. Four men and one woman, we talked about her a couple weeks ago, I'm going to bring her back up again tonight. Four men and one woman made late night rides, alerting the early Americans of what dangers lay ahead. They were Paul Revere, Samuel Prescott, Israel Bissell, and William Dawes and Sybil Ludington. So let's talk about Paul Revere, one we all know, right? Well, he was born in Boston. He started off training as a silversmith, and then once his father passed away, he went and enlisted in the provincial army to fight in the French and Indian War. And when he came back, he got back into his father's silversmith business. And then once the Stamp Act of 1765 kicked in, it really put the hurt on him. So frustrated by this, it gave him cause to join the Sons of Liberty, a group of men initially responsible for organizing early revolution efforts and develop a close association with Joseph Warren. Now, on the night of April 18th, 1775, Joseph Warren sent Revere to send the signal to Charlestown that the British troops were on the move. Revere rode through northern Boston, through what is now Medford, Somerville, and Arlington, warning the American patriots about the enemy's movement. Now, contrary to popular beliefs, Paul Revere never shouted the phrase, "The British are coming," and instead rode swiftly and in secrecy northward. His journey ended in Lexington, where he met other Sons of Liberty, John Hancock and Samuel Adams. Sound familiar? Afterwards, after meeting up with William Dawes and Samuel Prescott, the three men went their separate ways to improve their chances of escape from British officers stationed along the road. Revere would be captured by the British, but his comrades would be more successful in their journeys. Now, William Dawes. Joseph Warren would not just send out Paul Revere that night, but would commission William Dawes to make the ride to warn the colonial Minutemen as well. On the night of April 18th, Joseph Warren assigned Dawes along with Revere the mission of riding north to Lexington to warn Samuel Adams and John Hancock of their impending arrest and the seat underground. We've talked about this, right, in the Underground series. And to alert the colonial Minutemen that the British were on the move. Dawes would arrive in Lexington approximately half an hour after Revere because Revere's horse had supposedly been faster. Now, so they weren't just riding to warn that the British were coming. They were actually specifically going to Lexington to warn Samuel Adams and John Hancock that the British were coming to arrest them. Israel Bissell, from Hancock Clark House in Lexington, the two men chose to ride on to Concord, meeting Samuel Prescott along the way. Unfortunately, they were met along the road by British soldiers. The three men split up, Dawes riding into the yard of a country house along the way, where his horse threw him off and then ran away. Unable to locate his horse, Dawes was forced to walk back to Lexington. Samuel Prescott. With permission from Joseph Warren, Paul Revere arranged for Samuel Prescott to meet himself and Dawes on the road from Lexington to Concord the night of April 18th. A native of Concord, Massachusetts, Prescott was familiar with the territory and would be able to serve as a guide for the two men on their nighttime journey. When the three were met along the road to Concord by British officers and were forced to split up, Prescott would be the only one of the three to eventually reach Concord, carrying Warren's news to that part of the state. His knowledge of the terrain and his daring horsemanship allowed him to reach his destiny safely. Now, I got ahead of myself. Israel Bissell. Unlike the more famous names of Revere, Dawes, and Prescott, Israel Bissell, also known to history as both Isaac and or the Trail Bissell, Trail Bissell, was the man who made the longest ride, starting around the 13th of that month. According to legend, a professional post rider for the American colonists, Bissell rode 4 days and 6 hours along the old post road. It's like the postman. I'm going to watch that again, covering a total of 345 miles in that time. According to the story, he shouted along the way, to arms, the war has begun, in the sensationalist manner, which would bring the most attention and most likely make the best newspaper headlines. Bissell began his journey in Watertown, Massachusetts, now, which is disarm their people, just to the west of Boston, and drove his first horse so hard that it died just outside of Worcester, Massachusetts. He continued down to Philadelphia, warning the militias along the way. Bissell had supposedly carried a message from General Joseph Palmer, which was printed in the newspaper of the day. Now, there's more here. Sybil Ludington. The last of the famous Knight Riders was surprisingly a woman, although she would not make her journey until April 26, 1777. So, what, 8 days later? Her service to the American forces was remarkable. The daughter of Colonel Henry Ludington, Sybil, at the young age of 16, would make a journey double to that of Revere, totaling 40 miles, to warn the colonists at Danbury, Connecticut, of the approach of the British. Commissioned by her father, who knew that Sybil was familiar with the terrain, the young girl set out at 9 p.m. the night of April 26th through Kent to Farmer Mills, and then returned back home again, damp from the rain and exhausted, just before dawn. The men she recruited were too late to save the town of Danbury, which had been set aflame by the British, but they were able to drive the enemy troops from the area. She was later commended by George Washington for her heroism. A statue of her was erected along her route in Carmel, New York, along with many other markers of her historic ride. Pretty cool, isn't it? This is good stuff. Okay, that was the night of the 18th of April, except for Sybil. She rode, 8 days later. But amazing. Those are the first Amron operators, the communications specialists carrying the message, right? But what would happen the next day when the shot was fired that was heard around the world changed everything. On April 19, 1775, on the town green at Lexington, Massachusetts, the tensions that had been building up between the American colonists and the British Empire finally exploded into warfare. The American Revolutionary War had begun. The battles of Lexington and Concord were the first American Revolutionary War battles. There's a link that I'm going to put in here for you that will take you to where you can read more about this. The day before the battles of Lexington and Concord, on April 18th, a leading patriot in Boston named Joseph Warren learned that the next day the British planned to send several hundred British soldiers to Lexington to arrest the rebel leaders, John Hancock and Samuel Adams, and to Concord, Massachusetts, with the goal of seizing arms stored at that town. And that's what I just wrote to you is their ride. But they stood their ground instead of being disarmed. And these were Christian, patriot men, exuding toxic masculinity, standing in the face of a tyrant, heavily outnumbered with the AR-15s of their day. Those were muskets. And they drove the British back. God was on their side. We celebrate it today, and it's heavily celebrated in the very same state where now it is a felony for you to have that, to take action, to act on that same spirit of resistance against tyranny, to be able to be properly armed, to stand in the gap. Well, they were felons back then. They were wanted for arrest. Of course, they didn't just go to prison. They were hung or hanged. But remember that this April 19th. And be checking us on Facebook and Radio Free Redoubt for more historic links and resources that we'll be posting throughout the week. All right, segment four is coming up. We're going to talk about preparedness. And that's something that came to mind for a lot of people this week when it looked like we were right on the cusp of war. Once again, it seems that people they got the wake-up call they've been needing, but are you going to learn? Are you going to learn that you've been given borrowed time when people were altering their plans because they didn't want to do things because they felt like they had to go to Costco or Sam's Club to top off and buy beans and bandages and rice and what have you? You should be acting with a sense of urgency if you don't already have that stuff. Act like missiles are going to start flying both directions in the next 48 hours, even if they're not. If you act with that type of a sense of urgency now, while the store shelves are still plentiful, and while you're not competing with your fellow countrymen for what few supplies are still left flying off the shelves, do it now. do it now. I would love to have more, but I'm going to have to rung what I brung. So, you should be taking advantage of that. We're going to talk about that. So for a lot of you, this was new. There were several that said, man, I don't know what I would do. I don't have any food stored up. Well, we're going to go to something that would be good to visit, even if you are a seasoned prepper or this is all new to you. And just this week, you started thinking about the reality, the possibilities of major disruptions in our supply chains and our communications and electric grid and all of this. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Don't go away. This is Radio Free Redoubt. Really in the name of...
It's down to the wire, and we Christian patriots have a duty. Some are asking, given the choices we have, why even vote? I'll tell you why, with a question. Do you think there are only two people running for public office this November? John Jacob, Matt Shea, Heather Scott, and many others have been saying it for a long time. We will never fix this country's problems from Washington, D.C. Our solutions are at the local level. There are good, conservative, God-fearing patriots on the ballot who need your vote. From city council positions to county commissioners, legislators, and many more. Christians make up the largest demographic who are not registered to vote. They also make up the largest voting block of registered voters who do not vote. If you don't do your duty as a citizen, you bear the responsibility for the condition of our nation, our states, and your local government. In a representative republic, the people get the government they ask for. And when they don't represent, they get the government they deserve. I'm Violette Szabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Lenin put it this way. It does not matter if three-quarters of mankind is destroyed. All that counts is that the last quarter is communist. Lenin spoke, communist world domination.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
We're back with segment four. Segment four is brought to you by Works. Holsters, Works LLC. That's W-E-R-K-Z as in Zulu. Go to works.com to find out how you can select and order your custom-made holster inside the waistband, outside the waistband. Great products, and they're made right here in the free zone in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. Works.com. All right. As a reminder, we are at AmCon 4 now. We've downgraded from AmCon 3. It's the heightened awareness there. We are working on a solution for our mobile app. Now, we've got a team that has done a stellar job and worked their tails off trying to keep this mobile app that we've been fighting. But we are actually going to be revisiting that very soon and trying to find a permanent solution for that so that our Amron members or anybody actually could download that Amron app so we can alert you when the AmCon level changes and give you guidance and little reminders of upcoming nets and so on. There's a lot of features we want to add to that. So we are continuing to assess the situation in Syria, just like we mentioned in segment one. There's still a large military buildup taking place. Putin's warning of global chaos if the U.S. carries out any additional missile strikes. So we don't want to take our eye off of that ball. We are I want to encourage you to continue training and practicing with your equipment, with your communications gear, inventory your preparedness equipment, and take advantage of this time that we have right now to get things in order. Now, if you're not sure where to start, I want to point you to some resources that I can't recommend highly enough. Now, I have I've passed James Rawls several times. We keep meaning to link up. I'm going to try to get him on for next weekend. And would like him to weigh in on the South Africa situation, and then also this latest scare and what he sees on the radar from an intelligence perspective and from a preparedness perspective, that with some action items that you can actually put into place. Now, until we get to that point, there are some resources, and James Rawls' very popular, widely read blog called Survival Blog, survivalblog.com. He has a quick start guide for preparedness newbies. So let me look at this. He talks about he gets emails from people, so he put together this. Okay, let me just let me say that. I'll read this to you. He says, often I get emails from folks that have just found Survival Blog or that have just finished a copy of my novel, Patriots, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, that they've received as a gift from a relative or a friend. Their response is surprisingly uniform. People feel overwhelmed by the enormity of what it takes to get a family prepared. First, take a deep breath and relax. Just relax. Just realizing that you need to get prepared has already put you ahead of 70% of your neighbors, who are sadly little more than clueless sheeple. If you accumulate a 1 month food supply, that elevates your preparedness into the 80th percentile of preparedness when compared to your neighbors. I agree. And by the time you work your way up to a 1 year supply, you'll be in the 98th percentile. It's not very difficult, it's not very expensive, and it's not very time consuming. Just do it one step at a time. Now, it can be time consuming, and it can be expensive, and it can be difficult, but it can be as complex and as expensive or as simple and inexpensive as you choose to make it. So whatever your budget, you can adapt. This is me throwing this in there. Okay. But you know, if you don't, some people are like, oh, if I just won the lottery, I could have all this stuff. Well, stop thinking like that. Go with what you've got. All right. First things first, before you begin to prepare, pray. As a Christian, I put my trust in God's guidance, providence, and protection. You can and should do the same. See my prayer page, he writes. And we'll put this up there. We'll put a link to this article. Okay. A very good point that he makes is that survival isn't about stuff, it's about skills. So you should take advantage of low cost and no cost training. All right, let me skip down here. I want to talk about the list of lists. This is one of the most awesome things anybody could have put together. So as he describes in his novel, Patriots, you should start your family preparedness stocking effort by first composing a list of lists. Then draft prioritized lists for each subject on separate sheets of paper. And they also got a spreadsheet. It's linked from here. I downloaded it. It's great. It's so helpful. But you can they even have a spreadsheet for you to download. Okay, just be sure to print out a hard copy for use when the power grid goes down or before the power grid goes down. It's important to tailor your list to suit your particular geography, climate, and population density, as well as your peculiar needs and likes and dislikes. Someone setting up a retreat in a coastal area is likely to have far different lists than somebody living in the Rockies. Then he's got this list of items ran down here. At the very top of it is water. Now, this is very appropriate and very strategic because oftentimes in emergency disaster situations that happen all the time, this isn't doom and gloom. People are faced with hurricanes. They're faced with the reality of swarms of tornadoes, with earthquakes. This is a reality that happens all around us. You are not in a position to help others if you yourself are in need of help. So the first thing you do is take yourself out of the equation and specifically your family out of the equation as far as the list of people that need help. Because you don't want to have to sit there and watch your kids starving because there's no food supplies coming. Now, a lot of people do have food and they've got enough food to get them through most crises, but what they don't have is water. Even when there's water all around, it's contaminated and that gets people extremely sick. So you've got to have the ability, you can't store up enough water. You have to have the ability to procure and treat water. a method of carrying water, and a method of purifying water. That means you need to have fuel for boiling, and you need to have filters for filtration or chemically treating it. But water has got to be at the top of your list. All right, then he goes right on down, fuel, security, firearms, communications, first aid, and I'll let you read that list. But I recommend getting that spreadsheet, the Excel spreadsheet, downloaded and start using it and filling it out and inventorying, find out what you need, or just print out a piece of paper, but start taking a stock of what you have and what you need. That's going to help you greatly. Now, over the years, and many other people do the same thing that I've talked to, over the years I've had people say, I know that I need to prepare. I don't know where to start. Or what am I preparing for? Well, what actually, I've always kind of been a preparedness-minded Boy Scout. You know, my first disaster that I remember was when I was 12 years old when Mount St. Helens erupted. It was dark for almost 2 days. Woke up to like 4 inches of ash. And the stores were completely cleared out. In my mind, I became a prepper. I started stashing like baked beans and top ramen and stuff like that in my own little pack that I started snitching stuff out of the cupboards to make my own little pack. And so I kind of started that way. But really, in the scope of where our country's headed, and serious preparedness, that actually happened for me about 15 years ago because I was really into the guns and shooting and that aspect of it. But you know, having a couple weeks worth of food stored up was pretty much it. I never really looked at it systematically. And so that changed when a friend of mine handed me a book. He goes, "Have you read this?" I looked at it. It says, "Patriots, a novel of the coming collapse." I'm like, "No, I haven't. I haven't even heard of it." He goes, "What?" He goes, "Oh my gosh, dude, you got to read this. It's awesome. I mean, preparedness, patriot stuff. I mean, it's really cool about what's very likely a picture of what our future could look like in our country, the way things are going, and then how you can get through it." I'm like, "Oh, it sounds cool." I read it so fast. I read it again. And then I started following Survival Blog. And I'm like, "This is really cool." Well, a few years later, maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago, I came across, 8 years ago, came across One Second After. And it's written by William Fortune. We'll put the links to both of these books in the highlights and resources posting for the show. But what I do is there's two books that I start off with, and this is just a start, but it gets you in the right mindset. It helps you prepare for a scenario that you can then begin imagining, and then it helps you in your preparedness when you're actually preparing for a specific event that you can see in your mind. Now, the reason why I strongly recommend, and I give away when I can, when I come across them at the used bookstore, or I get them on sale, or at a garage sale, or whatever, when I see these books, I snatch them up to give away. And one is The Patriots, A Novel of the Coming Collapse by James Rawls. And the other one is One Second After by William Fortune. And the reason why is because it really contrasts two groups of people. The stories, one is just the collapse of our society and this group of people that are prepared, that have been preparing for years for the event and how they get through it. One Second After is an EMP scenario and what it would look like in a very realistic way, the effects that would have on our country and even our local communities. But the contrast is that in Patriots, it follows a group of people that are prepared and have thought about this in advance. And One Second After catches a community of people who are not prepared. And it's really well done. So you can learn much about all the stuff they wish they would have had in One Second After, all the things they wish they would have done. And they did some good things being just hurled into this situation, but it also, you really learn from their mistakes and the things they wish they would have done. Outstanding. So those two books are, that's how you get started. Patriots, A Novel of the Coming Collapse, and then One Second After. Then another EMP book is Lights Out by David Koppel. And then, of course, there's the 299 Days book series by Glenn Tate. There's the Going Home book series by A. American. both of which AMRON and Radio Free Readout are specifically mentioned in. And then there's A Great State by Shelby Gallagher, just came out. I haven't read yet, but I'm going off of Glenn's recommendation, and I like his books. So, yeah, these are things you need to have to start off with. And if you follow any of these books that I just read, there's so much that can be gleaned from it. And Patriots was really kind of a how-to novel, or it's a how-to book wrapped in a novel. And over at Survival Blog, he's got tons of other books. The SHTF plan, you know, Stuff Hits the Fan plan, or the Teotihuacan, When the End of the World as We Know It Hits, How You Can Prepare Your Family. Now, this isn't, you know, doomsday, the sky's falling. This is just the end of the world as we know it. Not the end of the world, just the end of the world as we know it. Kind of like when the Nazis invaded Poland. It wasn't the end of the world, but it was the end of the world as they knew it. Everything changed. From that point forward, when something happens, some catastrophic, sudden event takes place, when you know in your mind things are never going to be the same again for us, right? That's Teotihuacan, the end of the world as we know it, all right? SHTF, is that Stuff Hits the Fan. That's like the event, right? That's the surviving that period. Okay, so those are some books I definitely recommend. And now we're very strong proponents of communications, emergency communications. It's so overlooked and it's so critical. And we've heard the testimonies of people who have gone through disasters saying, if you got comms, you're king. You will be hailed a hero in your communities to be able to inform yourself and your family and your community and inform others, to be informed and then to inform others. So I want to ask you, what would you do? What would you do if missiles started flying and we were hit with a cyber attack that took down our communications infrastructure in the United States? How would you stay informed? How would you inform others? Well, if you go to AMRON.com, we address that. There's videos and there's more on the way, more content. But first of all, you need the means to be able to receive communications, if nothing else. A shortwave radio with single sideband capabilities and a scanner for local communications. Your shortwave radio for hearing communications outside of your area. And then I would strongly recommend getting a signals operating instructions. The SOI version 3 is out right now. And you can get that, the PDF version. It's only a $6 recommended donation. And it's a PDF that you can print out and have in your binder right there with part of your gear. It tells you what frequency to turn to, when to turn to it, and what mode at that time. And then start getting involved with the practice nets. Join AMRON. There's a free AMRON that you can join. Okay? Start developing the skills and start training. And then start networking with others. Build a network of people so you can get informed and then inform others. That's the whole purpose of communications, and serve your community. Now, there's a big exercise coming up, T-Rex 2018, on July 20th through the 22nd. Put it on your calendar. That's Teotihuacan Readiness Exercise 2018. This year, it is going to be a pandemic scenario. And we're working on that right now. It's really exciting. And matter of fact, as soon as I get off of here, that's what I'm going to be working on. Okay, so we're going to be talking about more about communications and including the finishing up the outlines that I have for videos, for video series projects that I want to get out to you guys as soon as possible. So I can start getting some of those kicked out before T-Rex. So lots of that. Keep checking AMRON.com. All right. Okay, that's all I got for you guys this week. You just have a blessed week this week. And stay tuned, stay in prayer, stay frosty, stay alert, and stay tuned. We'll be talking about this stuff more. Lots of good stuff. All right. God bless. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.